Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Jack Alice, an author and spiritual teacher who has done a lot of investigation and searching around, and as a result he has brought out a book called Prophecy, Challenge and Blessing, Visions of 2012 and the Shift. So it's a subject I think that we're all very interested in, particularly at this time. There's a lot of talk of 2012. So welcome to the program, Jack.
Thank you indeed, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. I got my candle going. I got my water ready here. I'm all ready to rock and roll here.
That's brilliant. Now, is it correct to say that since you, I believe, feel that a lot of information comes from people you describe as our indigenous relatives, that the book is mainly based on Native American sources?
Well, I wouldn't say Native American sources as much as indigenous sources. I like to include everybody. And of course, the only difference there is that the Native Americans are the indigenous sources from Native America, and there's hundreds and thousands of other nations, all around the planet, and they're basically all telling us the same thing, which is not just a coincidence as far as these times we're living in, and we've got tribes in South America, we've got the African nations, we've got Mexico, all over the place, the Mayas, the Hopis, and they're all basically telling us the same thing. So yeah, very strongly Native American influence, but I like to broaden it even more than that. Mike, I just got back from a ceremonial event at Deer Mountain in California, and there were elders there from, there were probably 12, I'm just guessing, there were probably 12 elders there from about, I'm going to guess 6 different nations, and I'm going to guess 4 different countries. We had several Mayan elders there. We had an elder from Africa. We had several Native American elders, a Pueblo, a Chumash nation member, and so, and they're all saying the same thing. It was interesting when I got up to give my little talk in front of the group, and I was talking about this basically, about how one of the things that I'm learning as a white person is that all the indigenous nations are telling us the same thing. And when I kind of rattled off what it is they were saying, I had elders from all over the planet Earth looking at me, and they were all being translated. Most of them had translators because most of them spoke Spanish and one of them spoke African, and they were all nodding their heads going, yep, that's it. So that was very, very, very encouraging. And two of them asked for my book. So apparently, the message I'm picking up is accurate as far as what they're telling us. And I think it's a very important message.
Yes, indeed. Now, I was quite amused in a way, although you've obviously, in a sense, admitted to what you've done, that as you wrote the book, you obviously had reason to update it. And then when you finally printed it, you said the last chapter became the first. Explain why that was.
Well, it was simply because I was changing so fast. I couldn't keep up with myself, basically. I was changing so fast, learning so much, and just getting such new spins on everything and new perspectives on everything that, no sooner would I finish a section than I'd go back later on and I'd go, that's not even me anymore. So, I kind of had to catch up to myself, and I ended up rewriting the entire first chapter, and I ended up going back and I wrote a new introduction after that. And then I went and I rewrote most of the third chapter also, simply because of it just it had to match up with, how I was seeing the world, and things were just changed. That doesn't mean that the stuff I wrote originally was wrong. It just meant that that the point of view from which it was being expressed, i.e. me, I was changing so quickly that it was kind of hard to keep up with myself. So the book may have been a little bit bumpy because of that, but it certainly reflects the state of my being. And this also turned out to be a wonderful blessing, because I think it was a wonderful way for me to be able to illustrate one of the ways in which this thing we call the shift works, because I do consider myself to be a living embodiment of this message and of everything that I write about. And so it was a way of illustrating, what the shift looks like, in the life of a flesh and blood human being who is actually, you know, experiencing so many of these things and experiencing them in a positive way. You know, a lot of people are experiencing a lot of negativity in today's world because they just can't keep up with the, you know, things are changing so fast that, you know, people are losing their marbles and they're getting sick and just can't keep up with the whole thing. So there's enough negativity going around as far as all the things that are changing in the world. So I think it's refreshing to have a positive spin on it in terms of you know, somebody, me, who is the embodiment of this message and who is changing in these ways and in a way that is you know, consistent with the positive side of the message about the shift, which is not only the death. You know, we have the death of one world on the one hand, which sounds like you know, a negative message. But when we flip it around and when we realize that the death of one world presents us with the opportunity to create an entirely new and different world, a world of light and spirit, then suddenly this negative message flips into a positive one real quickly. And it's nice to have role models for that, you know, people who are living it, and so you can see what it looks like, you know, in the life of a real flesh and blood human being. And I think that's me, and I think it's probably you, and I think it's probably a lot of people in your audience also are shifting, you know, in harmony with what's going on as opposed to pushing against it.
I'm absolutely sure that you are correct in that assumption. Now, it is to fulfill our destiny as spiritual beings, but who has decided what our destiny should be?
Well, I think that's decided by the divine spirit of a living universe is the way I look at it. And when I look at divine law, it seems to me like it's pretty... it seems like it's pretty clear what divine law is, and that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm pretending to know more than anybody else or that I'm pretending to be God or something like that because I understand this. It breaks down to stuff that's just so simple. You know, when we talk about divine law basically means the universe working in a way in which, you know, we see the universe as a place that is divinely created. In other words, it's just not some random accident, and things aren't just, you know, happening, you know, by chance. You know, we do see the universe and we see the world as divinely created. And we also see divine law as something that's all about harmony. It's all about, something is working in a divine way in accordance with the laws of the universe and in accordance with divine law. When the universe is allowed to flow smoothly, when it's allowed to flow in its own natural rhythm, without the outside forces, you know, attempting to interfere with that or to tinker with it or to tamper with it or to change it in some way or to control it in some way. So when the universe is allowed simply to flow freely, that's what we mean by divine law. And when those forces you know, attempt to go contrary to that, when they attempt to, you know, control the laws of nature, as, you know, Western civilization is doing, when they attempt to control the forces of nature and to control the flow of the universe and to kind of take it over and you know, turn it into their creation, that's when things get all messed up. So divine law is all about resonance and harmony, and something that goes contrary to divine law is all about, you know, pushing against that flow and trying to connect that flow. And again, that's the message that all of the indigenous traditions had for us, because they were all about living in harmony with nature and living in harmony with the spirit world. That's where all of their knowledge came from. That's where all of their spirituality, where all of their metaphysics came from. It all came from, you know, the forces of the natural world. So that's where we learn these things. And it's not as hard as people very often try to make it in terms of understanding these things.
Right. Now, since it is associated with the 21st of December 2012, does that mean that window of opportunity is actually, as you might say, set in stone?
Well, I'd have to answer that honestly by saying I really don't know. It's a very, very complicated issue, and let me just tell you what my spin on it is. It seems pretty apparent to me that the date December 21st, 2012, winter solstice 2012, is a very, very important date for many reasons. Certainly, it's a very important date due to the astrological alignment of that date, and it's also a very, very important date in terms of so many of the prophecies, virtually all of the indigenous prophecies, also point to this date as being highly, highly significant. The thing that people misunderstand about the date is they tend to see this as to see the shift, you know, which is prophesized and predicted by many to occur on December 21st, 2012. They see it as a single point date. In other words, they see it as a point in time, a single point in time, you know, where everything's going to happen, you know, all at once, kind of like a Big Bang event, and it's all going to happen, you know, on one day. In my opinion, that's the mistake. And again, virtually all the indigenous prophecies agree on this. They aren't necessarily predicting to that date in particular, but they are rather predicting to a window of time approximate to that date. And the more I learn about it, it does seem as though December 21st, 2012 does seem to be, if it's not the midpoint of this window of time, it appears to be pretty close to it. In other words, this date is a highly, highly significant date. But if we focus on that date and that date alone, we are really missing the boat, because the shift is not a single date or a single point. It is rather a process, and it takes place more over a gradual period of time, as opposed to happening over a single point. Now, how big the window of time is, I have no idea. There are all kinds of different theories on that. There are some people who maintain that the window of time is, you know, like 80 years on either side of that date, and there's some people who think it's even longer. But when you look at the date, the one thing, you know, once you become aware of these things, there's one thing about this date that really is significant, or even the discussion of these dates that becomes significant. And that is, once we realize that the shift is a gradual process, and it's something that takes place over time as opposed to this specific point, then none of these dates and none of these predictions really have a whole lot of meaning anymore. We do know for a fact, in my opinion, that we are in this window. We have entered this time period that we refer to as the shift. And the closer we get to December 21st, 2012, things seem to be intensifying more and more. So we know we're in this window. We know that the shift has already started. We know we're already there. So once we know that, there really is no point in waiting for some date in the future, you know, for some Big Bang event to happen, because the only time that matters is now, today. And if we're going to get to work on this, and if we're going to make this happen, then the time to do that, you know, would begin now, you know, in the present moment. And I think if there's one thing about the shift that people really need to get in the proper perspective, I think that's it. In terms of it's happening now, let's not get all bent out of shape over dates and predictions. Let's focus on what really matters, and let's do it now. Because, you know, if we wait for something to happen in the future, we run the risk of, you know, missing the boat altogether.
Yes, because all of the time the energies are increasing, and I see it as a matter of us having to do our part to bring ourselves up to the same level, so that when we reach the winter solstice 2012, it seems to me to be a key point in the shift, we will be ready for it. And then, as you rightly pointed out, that isn't the beginning and the end all in one. It actually is simply an important part in the whole process.
I agree with that. I think you said that very well. I do believe that the date December 21st, 2012, I don't mean to minimize it's important. I do believe it's a very significant date, but I think people get that all, you know, kind of twisted out of the appropriate context, and when they get all hung up on predictions and things like that. And this is a very, very important time in which we're living, and we're in the window. And everything that was prophesized, you know, by our indigenous relatives, it's all happening. It's all happening. It's all happening now. We can see it playing out in the world. We can both see the negative things, if you want to look at them that way, in terms of, you know, the ending of the old paradigm world. Certainly, you know, it's coming down, thereby creating the opportunity, you know, to create an entirely new world. And another thing about this, Mike, I'd like to emphasize, which is another, you know, very important aspect of the shift that people need to be aware of, is another one of the great misunderstandings about this shift is that people see this as something, particularly the ones who are really into the dates and predictions, they see it as something that's going to happen to us. In other words, you know, on December 21st, 2012, something like that, the north and south electromagnetic poles are going to shift, and we're going to experience, you know, this tremendous, you know, shifting of energy or something like that, something happening to us. And again, yes, that's a very, very grave misconception, because one of the most important things about the shift, and again, this is something about which all the indigenous prophecies agree, is that we, the human beings of the planet Earth, play a very, very central part in this. And we play a central part in this in terms of making it happen. In other words, it's up to us to get involved in this, and it's up to us to play our part, and it's up to us to make it happen. And if we don't play our part to make it happen, it ain't going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, then the outcome is probably not going to be a good one. So, you know, this is not something magic. You know, we're not going to all wake up on December 22nd, 2012, and, you know, the world's just going to be different and everything's going to be wonderful. No, no, no. There's a lot of people that would like us to see it that way, but that's not the way. It's not the way it's going to work. You know, it's up to us. The fate of the planet is basically in our hands, and it's up to us to make this happen. It ain't just going to happen all by itself.
Right. You spoke there of the old paradigm and obviously the need to create a new one. How would people go about doing that? I mean, would they even know what to do?
Well, that's an excellent question. I spend a lot of time in my book on that very question, because for many, many people, are still kind of stuck in the old paradigm, if you will. And I don't mean to put those people down or anything like that, because I can appreciate that. You know, there's a lot of people who are stuck in old paradigm jobs and living from paycheck to paycheck, and, you know, life is tough out there these days. And for those kinds of people, you know, it may seem like, you know, a real stretch. The kind of things I'm talking about just may seem like a real stretch in terms of us, you know, playing our part to create, you know, the new world of light and spirit. There are those of us like myself who are actually, you know, who are actually have our eye on certain sustainable communities in certain places. I, for example, just returned from a sustainable community that's being built in the mountains of North Central California at Deer Mountain. So certainly that is one very tangible thing that people can do. You know, we can begin to think about building those types of communities and growing our own food again and living a lifestyle that is, you know, in harmony with nature as opposed to in conflict with nature, and doing it and preparing basically the seeds for the next generation. Now, that's a very tangible step that people can take. But I know that that's a real, real stretch for a lot of people to be thinking that way, because they're still stuck in the system. So what people can do who are still stuck in the system, they can start by doing the little things, and they can start thinking about this, and they can start planning, and they can start preparing, and they can start doing the little things. They can start one of the big things that they can do. It sounds like a little thing, but it really isn't. They can begin to take responsibility once again for their own lives, and that's a really key point in all this. Because the old paradigm is all about dependency. It's all about us giving up our responsibility, basically, and allowing ourselves to be dependent on others, you know, to take care of us from cradle to grave. You know, that's what the old paradigm, yes, is all about. And it's basically a system of slavery, and it's a system of dependence in which we have sacrificed our taking responsibility for our own lives. So when we talk about creating the new world is a world in which we are once again going to be taking the primary responsibility for our own lives as individuals. And people who are stuck in the system can begin to start to do those kinds of things now. They can do it by, you know, beginning to think about getting out of the system, beginning to think about changing their job. They can do it in the food they eat. They can do it in how they take care of their bodies. And they can do it in a million ways. They can keep their old paradigm job, and they can keep their paycheck coming in, but they can begin to, you know, they can begin to start taking care of themselves again, and they can begin to start doing the little things, and at least planning and moving in the direction of the things we're talking about. One of the things I really never want to do is I never want to, you know, overload people or overwhelm people with the hugeness of this, even though it is huge, but it serves absolutely no purpose, you know, to be freaking people out about all this stuff, and you know, everybody can play their part in a way that fits their own particular life. And then once people, you know, get it together as far as taking responsibility, get it together as far as, you know, their own spiritual ascension is concerned, then people just wait for their own guidance. You know, their guidance will tell them, you know, when it's time to quit their job or you know, when it's time to, you know, to head for the hills or whatever it might be. And I currently am waiting for my own guidance. You know, I'm still living in, you know, outside of Milwaukee here and in an area that's a very, you know, old paradigm, you know, area, just a bunch of good old boys who, you know, ride their Harleys and that sort of thing. And I'm doing as much as I can reasonably do in this setting, and I'm waiting for my guidance as far as what to do in the future. And if the time comes to head for the hills, then I'm ready to go, but I certainly have not received that guidance yet. So waiting for our guidance is something, again, it's one of those steps on the spiritual path that that we should all be involved in.
Right. So on this journey, which obviously hasn't got very many months to go, how do we react to what the dark side are doing?
Good question. And I think, Mike, your audience is probably pretty aware as far as this. Are they not? I don't think I need to go into a whole, you know, long, drawn-out explanation of what we mean by the dark side. Or do I? Do I need to get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of what that's all about?
Yes, just briefly, yes.
Okay. Well, what I refer to by the dark side is the world basically does not work the way that we are told it works. We are basically, our reality, our old paradigm third-dimensional reality, is basically an illusion that we are presented with, and it's an illusion basically that strips us of our power. It strips us of our, it's basically a trick that's played upon us. It's a trick in which we are tricked into giving up our freedom, and we are tricked into giving up our spirits. And this is a trick that it's done very consciously, very, very volitionally. This is something that it's done to us by some very nasty beings or people or beings who are running the show from the top of the pyramid, you know, whose primary purpose here is one of dominance and control over the human race.
Yes.
They do this in a wide variety of ways, but they do it through most of the systems of the old paradigm world. They do it through our system of money, they do it through our system of energy, and those sorts of things, in which we all basically are just dependent upon this system, you know, to take care of us, and we don't know how to take care of ourselves anymore because it's been done this way for such a long time. The first most important thing to, you say, what can we do in relationship to the dark side as far as all this is concerned? The first thing we can do is we can become aware of the game that's being played, the game that tricks us into giving up our freedom, the game that tricks us into giving up our spirit. The first thing we can do is we can become aware of the game. But once we become aware of the game, then it's very, very important for us not to get stuck in that. There's a lot of people who learn about this whole thing about called the New World Order and this dark side thing that I'm talking about. They become aware of it, and they become, you know, very afraid of it, very intimidated by it, and they become very intrigued by it. They spend way too much time understanding it and studying it, and very often, you know, the more they understand it and the more they study it, kind of the deeper they sink into their own negativity, and pretty soon it just all seems really hopeless, and they come away with the attitude of, you know, we're screwed, basically, is what they come away with. You know, they're holding all the cards, we have no power. And if they continue to, you know, to attempt to implement their whole New World Order scheme, we're basically screwed. Well, that certainly is not a healthy attitude, and that's not the way to proceed here. Once we become aware of this of the New World Order scheme, it's necessary for us to let go of it. It's necessary for us to detach ourselves from it. And to begin to live our own lives and to pay as little attention to it as possible and to give it as little energy as possible. Now, I know it's difficult to do this entirely. You know, I, for example, am still, you know, stuck in many of the You have to forgive me here. There's a tremendous. Yeah, hold on, Mike, please. Yes.
Okay.
Wait. Please don't. Please go away. Go away, whatever it is. I'm busy. I got somebody banging on my door, and we got a thunderstorm happening here, and all hell's breaking loose.
Oh dear.
But the important thing, Mike, is to learn how to detach from the dark side, and to ignore it as much as we reasonably can, to live our own lives. To whatever degree we do get stuck, for example, I still file my income taxes, and I still, you know, do certain things like that, which I must do, you know, just to survive. And however, I don't give that any more power than I need to. I just simply do what I need to do, to survive and then detach from it as much as possible, and to live my life by looking at the world and living with a new paradigm way of looking at things, as opposed to being stuck in the old paradigm way of looking at things.
Right. Of course, the new paradigm will bring with it new rules, but I would guess by and large they will be based on love and light, and we will be quite happy to comply with them.
Well, yes, love and light. I like the sound of that. I like the sound of your radio show. Connecting with the light. The new world is going to be the new world of light and spirit, and it's going to be a new world of taking responsibility and reclaiming our freedom, reclaiming our power, and not buying into all the limitations that are foisted upon us in the old paradigm world.
Right.
Now, I apologize about that moment of confusion there, but every once in a while here in Wisconsin, these horrendous thunderstorms swoop in out of nowhere, and I got all my windows open, and my neighbor's pounding on my door for some reason, probably because the windows are open in my car or whatever. But let's just forge onward here.
Oh, well, it all sounds good fun, doesn't it? When we're on the other
Can you hear the thunder?
Not quite, no.
Okay.
It's probably a bit muffled the way I would hear it. Now, everything is speeding up, and I think most people, whether they have any idea of what is taking place with the changes, agree that time is going faster. Have you any thoughts about why that is?
I don't know. It's either speeding up or it's slowing down. I can't decide. So very often in my own life, it actually seems like it's slowing down. And I'm not sure I understand time enough to really give you a good answer to that question. I know that the more that I slow down in my own life, and I know that I'm not sure it's time that's speeding up as much as it's people that are speeding up, if you know what I mean. People have the perception that time is speeding up, but very often it's not necessarily time that's speeding up, but it's just people that are speeding up. And we can certainly see the pace of life in our world is speeding up in a way that is very abnormal and very unhealthy and definitely not a good thing. And I think that's one of our new paradigm ways of living, or one of the new elements of our new paradigm lifestyle, will be just that. It will be one of the most important things we can do, Mike, in order to live the new paradigm lifestyle, and one of the most important things we can do to embark upon our spiritual transformation is very, very simply learning how to relax again. Learning how to relax again, and we certainly do not live in a very relaxed world. And one of the primary goals in my life, pertaining to my spiritual ascension and those kinds of things, is just that, to live my life with an attitude and with feelings of calmness and relaxation and with a quiet mind and those sorts of things. In other words, slowing down and letting things flow, as opposed to pushing against the flow so dramatically. And for myself, as I continue to relax and as I continue to slow down and to do those sorts of things, I've noticed that it seems to me like time is actually slowing down. And it seems to me also, people say, well, you can't live that way. You can't live, your life in a meditative state all the time, because, you'll never get anything done. You just become a marshmallow and that's no way to live. Well, I find that it exactly the opposite is the case. I found that the more I slow down and the more I live my life and do the things that I do in a relaxed way, I find, and I really don't have an explanation for this as far as this making logical sense, I'm not sure it does, but I have found that the more I slow down and the more relaxed I become, I have found that I actually get more done instead of less done. I look at the end of the day, I go, wow, I look at all I got done today, and I was hardly even trying. So that's the experience of it for me. But I have to admit, that when it gets into the to the Einsteinian Albert, as in the Albert Einstein notions of time and stuff like that, I often have to admit that when we get into the physics of the timelessness and everything, that's often something that I don't think I have as good an understanding of as I could. But it certainly seems like things are speeding up for most people. But I think it's them I think it's the people that are speeding up more than it's actually time itself that's speeding up. What do you think about that, Mike?
Well, yes, we clearly live in linear time, and it has been said, and I think you commented in a manner of speaking that about this, that there will be a point where time will cease to exist. And I think on spiritual levels, that's considered to be when everything is in the now. So certainly our perception of time is changing, and I think that's what it is. It is perception, personally.
Yeah, and I'm real comfortable with that too. I'm comfortable with what I just described to you in terms of living life more slowly and living life in a more relaxed fashion. It seems to me like time is ceasing to exist more and more, as far as my own experience of it. So I can embrace that.
Now, a couple of times or more in your book, you've mentioned the critical mass. What is critical mass, and how will it affect what is going to happen to us?
Critical mass is an exceedingly important part of this, and it's one of the variables in all this also, from which we can also gain a lot of reassurance. We can gain a lot of confidence and optimism in relationship to this, because again, one of the misconceptions about all this has to do with the fact that people often suffer from the mistaken notion that there's no way that we can change the world, or there's no way that we can create the new world, because we, you know, those of us who are working towards these things, because we're such a pitifully small minority. You know, there's just so few of us. You know, how can so few people, you know, have such grand impact upon things? So when people look at that, they tend to get kind of discouraged, and then they think, well, you know, the only way we can effect such grand change is by virtue of, you know, us becoming a majority, or we have to be, you know, most of the people in order to make something like this happen. And that's really, really a very grave misconception, and that's not how it works. And there's a principle involved here that's really important. The principle is the principle of critical mass. And what critical mass refers to is the fact that we don't have to be a majority. As a matter of fact, we only very small minorities of empowered people are usually the ones who effect the major changes that take place in the world. And the principle that's involved here is that very, very small groups of people who have not lost the connection with the true source of their power have exponentially more power than much, much, much larger groups that don't have that connection. So it's actually very small groups, let's say less than 1%, very small groups from a percentage point of view that actually wield the primary power in the world. But they do it in a way that is not a function of numbers, but is more a function, it's more of an energetic thing. Critical mass refers to a number. In other words, we right now are at the point where many, many of us are awakening and many of us are reconnecting with the higher powers of our higher consciousness and spirituality. We're awakening to that and connecting to that. You know, every day there's more and more and more of us. As soon as we hit a certain number, a certain energetic number, which is referred to as critical mass, and let's just assume that it's a half of 1%. I have no idea what the number is. But as soon as we hit that number, which is referred to as critical mass, then it's at that point where things are going to begin to change. And they're going to begin to change differently, not so much in a linear way, not so much in the way, you know, we're accustomed to things changing in the old paradigm. You know, in the old paradigm, the notion of the old paradigm that's so popular in terms of how things change is that, you know, the side that has the most money and the most guns and the biggest army, you know, that's the side that's going to win, and that's the side that's going to have the power. Well, what we're talking about here in relationship to critical mass is this working really very, very differently. And it doesn't work in such a linear way, and it doesn't work as far as what I described. It works in more of an energetic way. It works in more of a supernatural way, if you will. It's very similar to the 100th monkey. Remember the 100th monkey story?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
It's very similar to the 100th monkey story. And for those of people in your audience who don't know that story, it's I don't know if it's a myth or I don't know if it's based on fact, but the 100th monkey story goes as follows. One monkey will learn how to do something new, such as sucking up ants through a straw that they plucked from a tree. This ant shows another ant how to do that, who shows another ant how to do that, and on the line they cross it, they pass this knowledge down to one another very tangibly. And as soon as the 100th monkey has this knowledge, then all of a sudden, as if by magic, all of the monkeys in that area, or all the monkeys in that island, or all the monkeys in the world, however it goes, as soon as it hits the 100th monkey, then all of a sudden, as if by magic, as if by some function of mass, collective unconscious, all of a sudden all the monkeys have that knowledge. And critical mass will work very, very similarly. As soon as we hit that number, things are going to start to change in a way that is very nonlinear, is very supernatural. But that's the way it's going to work, and that's where we derive a significant amount of our power from that.
Yes. Personally, I see that as something that happens within groups of animals that have a group consciousness. At some point, as you're rightly pointing out, that energy within their consciousness suddenly, as it were, explodes. Then every animal has that knowledge within its own consciousness. If you think of the human race, then one can see that a similar thing could happen. So that's how I would call it, really.
Yeah, critical mass is very, very, very similar to that too. Once we hit that point, then things are just going to start changing in a way that we just hadn't imagined previously.
Right. Now, I get quite a few emails from people wanting to know what they can do. They want to be doing the right things as they head for this ascension period. So what would be your main advice that people could do to help themselves in that respect?
Well, let's really, and it's really important that we talk about this, because this really is the primary thing that we should always stress on this topic. And let me begin answering your question by just giving a little anecdote here. Very, very often, people, when they know what I write about and those sorts of things, they ask me the question, where should I go? What should we do? Where should we go? And basically what they mean by that, their question is a very fear-based question. And it derives from, they've heard about the possibility of an electromagnetic pole shift, and they've heard about, the possibility of, floods and continents falling and other continents rising, and the landscape being rearranged and those sorts of things. So they go, where can we go? What can we do? In relationship to all these changes. And the answer I give them is never the answer they want to hear, but it really is the one and only answer to the question. At least it's the primary answer to the question. The answer to the question, where should we go? What should we do? Is take care of yourself spiritually. And once again, this is one of the primary messages of virtually all of the ancient indigenous prophecies from thousands of nations all around the planet for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. It's always been the same message. The Hopis believed that we are currently in the fourth world. The world has already been destroyed three times according to Hopi prophecy and the Hopi wisdom. And they say that on each occasion, the world was destroyed because the human race had become unplugged from its spirituality. And basically had on the basis of becoming unplugged from their spirituality, they had become enticed and they had become seduced by all the temptations of the material world. And essentially, the Hopi maintain that that's already happened three times, and it's on the verge of happening again. Certainly, we can see that happening today in our world. In relationship to these incredible paradigm shifts that we're experiencing, in relationship to these monumental earth changes that we're also experiencing, it's very important for people to be aware of the fact that the primary source of their power, the primary source of their protection from these things that sometimes seem very overwhelming, is the power of their higher consciousness and the power of their spirituality. So it all begins with us getting to work on that as individuals. And then once we begin to get to work on it as individuals, then we can begin to work on it collectively, and we can begin to form communities that are based upon spirituality, as opposed to communities that are based upon placing spirituality way down the priority list and placing matter as the most important thing in the world. So get to work on ourselves spiritually. And one of the primary things that I've learned lately, Mike, that's been a major, really, turning point for me in a certain way is, as far as tools to work on our spirituality are concerned. And one of the things that I've learned from my Mayan elder friend, Eric Gonzalez, is, and the other elders that I just spent time with up at Deer Mountain, is the incredible power of ceremony as far as enhancing our spirituality, developing our spirituality, and embarking upon, what we refer to as this ascension process. And by ceremony, I'm referring here to the very traditional kinds of indigenous ceremonies. But ceremony is basically anything that we do, with the intent of connecting with spirit. Anything that we do with the intent of connecting with spirit. If we don't intend to connect with spirit, in other words, focus on spirit, then we won't be able to connect with spirit. This is not something that just comes to us. This is something that we have to do, with our thoughts and with our actions. So a ceremony is anything that we do with the intent of connecting with spirit, and it's also something we connect with spirit also with the vibration of this ceremony, with the feeling of this ceremony. Ceremony consists of prayer. Prayer is one of our most important, ways of conducting any kind of ceremony. And basically, prayer is nothing other than talking to spirit. And when we talk to spirit and when we pray, prayer basically usually consists of the same thing. It usually consists of expressing our infinite gratitude for all the blessings of this world. And prayer also consists of asking for guidance with all the things that we human beings need guidance with. Because without guidance from the spirit world, we have a very, very rough time, a very, very rough time of it in this world. And then we can expand our ceremonies from there to include all manner of other kinds of ceremonies. Very important for me, my ceremonies are the smoking of my sacred pipe, which I've accepted from the Mayan tradition, but certainly the Native Americans were also extremely into that. Singing, dancing, chanting, the playing of my singing bowls, the shaking of my shakers, singing of songs, chanting, those sorts of things. So connecting with the spirit world, with the power of these vibrations. And ceremony is something that it's almost impossible for us to be doing too much of it. Very often people say, "Oh, I don't have time for that. I'm too busy." That's the problem. We need to make more time for things like our spiritual ceremonies so that we can, make that connection with spirit and work on it. So there's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, and certainly there's more we can talk about what people should, can actually do to do these things. But that's one of the things that I'm doing these days, Mike, is I've been given very clear guidance from my own spirit guide to talk less about the shift in an academic kind of way, and to demonstrate more how to do these things through the power of ceremony. So when I go on my next book tour, which is beginning now, essentially, I'm going to be demonstrating a lot of this ceremony. I'm going to be doing a lot of this ceremony and basically showing how to do this, teaching how to do this, because white people have really kind of fallen off the wagon on this one, to the point where our ceremony in Western culture consists at the most of 1 hour on Sundays, and then when you know, once people leave church on Sundays, then they the whole rest of the week is lived, you know, very differently. And, you know, 1 week on Sundays just is not going to cut it. You know, this is something we need to do every day, and we need to do as much of it as we possibly can. And once we, you know, because once we get reconnected with Spirit, you know, it's from that point where all of the important things in life manifest. You know, they all manifest from Spirit. So once we get that part of things working, then everything else is just going to pop into place, and everything will just be in the flow.
Yes, indeed. If we want to build a new world of light and spirit, that is really what we have to become ourselves, isn't it? And I think this is the part of the question that people are really trying to get the answers to, is how can they become more spiritual, increase their vibration so that they go with the flow of energy and they're there when the process sort of lifts them up. So
right.
Have you got any comment on that?
No, you said it beautifully. I cannot embellish that at all. And it is a process. And we have to be ready. You know, we are going to be facing some challenges in the future. And we are unquestionably, this time we're living in is very obviously, it's a time of great challenge. And one of the greatest challenges we're facing is very simply stated is this incredible transformation that we're all experiencing. And, you know, in our old paradigm world, in our Western civilized world, we aren't trained very well. We aren't conditioned very well to handle change very well. You know, our lifestyles in the old paradigm world are kind of constructed around, having a lifestyle in which there's as little change as possible. And then when things do change massively, people just basically flip out. Well, that we are right now, we are in an age of monumental change on many, many different levels, and because of this, you know, we are all going to be very, very challenged. And because of that, it's necessary for us to be as properly aligned spiritually as we can possibly be, as strong as we can possibly be, and ready for the challenge. And
right.
Once we are ready for the challenge, and once we reconnect with our spirituality, the challenge even ceases to be a challenge. Because one of my monikers in the work I do is all about transforming these challenges into the blessings that the universe has actually designed them to be. And that's the way it works, basically. All of the challenges that we face in life, even the little minor piddly ones that we don't pay much attention to, all of the challenges that we face in life always are there for the purpose of helping us to take it to the next level, helping us to learn, you know, what we need to learn in that context. To continue on our evolution. So all challenges are basically blessings, and it's necessary for us to understand that. And once we get ourselves properly aligned spiritually, one of the primary things that we learn, you know, when we get reconnected with our spirituality, is we learn that we never have anything to fear, ever. Once we get ourselves aligned spiritually, once we reestablish our trust in spirit, our trust in our connection with spirit, we know that trust and that connection is going to take care of us under any and all circumstances, and that
right.
basically is the primary source of our reassurance and our comfort and our you know feeling good in times when we are confronted with such extreme change as we are today. So once we get reconnected with spirit, everything smooths out. Everything is okay again, in spite of the challenges that we're confronted with.
Right. Now, Jack, we're having such an interesting talk here. We're hardly noticing the time pass by. I've got about
my power's out. So I can't. My power's out. Sorry? So I can't even see the clock anymore.
Oh, right. Well, we have about 5 minutes, and I would therefore like to keep a couple of minutes back to allow you to give our listeners your website or any other information of that nature and me announce my guest for next week. So I think my final question to you, or point I make, is that I believe I'm correct in saying that the elders allege that over a long period of time they had been contacted by extraterrestrials, and I believe a lot of their knowledge was going through them. Now, that being the case, do you think, as I do, that they have a role to play in our near future?
that the extraterrestrials do?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, with 5 minutes, Mike, I don't know if I can cover this one.
You've got less than five minutes.
Very simply stated, ETs have been involved in this planet for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. This is absolutely nothing new, and simply because they're more or less behind the scenes doesn't change any of that one bit. And when we're talking about ETs, we're also dealing about dark ET entities, and we're also dealing with light ET entities. ETs are not all bad guys, and they're not all good guys. There is some of each, and they're both contending at this point. The planet Earth is a very, very important place in the universe right now, and these forces of light and forces of darkness are basically, you know, lining up their troops, you know, on the battlefield at this point. It's a bad metaphor, not a very new paradigm metaphor, but I think you know what I mean. And yes, the extraterrestrials will play a role in this, both the dark ones as well as the light ones, just as the dark humans as well as the light humans also will. And it's important.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you there to give you a minute to give our listeners your website address and any other comment you would like to make about what is available on it.
Okay. Very easy. My name is Jack, last name Alice, A-L-L-I-S. The website is www.jackalice.com. That's jackalice.com. And people can purchase all of my books and materials. My stuff is Amazon is not working for me right now. So none of my stuff is up on Amazon right now. So people can purchase my books and my DVDs on the website. And let me also offer a freebie to your audience, Mike. Anybody who emails me, my email address is jack@jackalice.com. That's jack@jackalice.com. And anyone from this show who emails me, the first one who emails me with their mailing address, I'll send them a free copy of the book. And any others who email me and who aren't first, I'll send them a free copy of my monthly newsletter. So send me an email, and I'll either send you a free copy of the book, or I'll send you my most recent newsletter.
And that's brilliant, and I thank you for that. It's been wonderful to have you on the show, and having read your book, let me quickly say that I find very little that I disagree with, and that would only be from a point of view of my own personal opinion, so I would recommend it to people. It's been very interesting. I've got about a minute left to tell you that next week I will have Cynthia Crawford as a guest. She's an ET sculptor. She's had contact with them since childhood. And she's been making sculptures since 2003. She's had hundreds of people from all around the world contact her. So, again, I think we will have a very interesting guest there. So thank you once again, Jack, for coming onto the program. It was excellent.
Thank you, Mike. I'll see you next time.
Indeed. Thank you. Right, friends, that's all for now. Thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.